Today is February 4th, 2007, and this is the Apple Weekly Report, a Mac Observer podcast. I'm Ricky Spiro.
And I'm Jeff Gamet. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/roundup.
Hey, Windows Vista went on sale this week. We're not going to talk about it on this show, though. The context machine is for, well, putting the news in context. That's why we do it. And it's hard to put Vista into context, at least for our purposes, without being able to fairly evaluate against its competition. In our estimation, that competition would be OS 10.5, or Leopard, as Apple calls it. And the OS wars are not going anywhere, so just stay tuned, folks. We'll get to it. There are all kinds of things to talk about, of course, in the OS wars. PR battles, the feature battles in the operating systems themselves, public comments from Microsoft and Apple, and, of course, the occasional user experience. We might want to talk a little bit about that, maybe. We'll get to it later. This week, though, we're going to talk in depth for the first time on this show about the iPhone. You may have heard of it. It got some good PR a few weeks ago at the Macworld Expo. You may or may not be familiar with it, but we haven't talked about it yet on this show. So that's because we've been waiting for the dust to settle a bit. And I say it has settled enough. So Jeff, hit it.
Okay, guess who's not distributing the iPhone? The answer is Verizon. Apparently, it didn't like Apple's terms for distribution of the iPhone and passed on the chance to be the exclusive distributor. That was because Apple wanted a percentage of the monthly fee and to be in control of the customer relationship, according to Jim Grace, a Verizon vice president. One of the other sticking points was that Apple and the carrier could sell the phone, but Verizon's distribution partners, namely Walmart and Best Buy, would have to be left out. And that was unacceptable to Verizon. Incidentally, it seems the Apple Singular deal is exclusive only in the U.S., so Apple can still choose how to market the iPhone globally.
There are some interesting things going on here. First of all, Verizon's network in the U.S. is based on CDMA encoding, not the GSM technology used by every other major carrier and the carriers around the world. Now, various observers in our forums and around the internet have speculated on various conspiracy theories about this, but it is a kind of perplexing comment to come out of Verizon when everyone can see that the technology Apple has used is completely incompatible with their network. So here's what we know. Today's iPhone is based on GSM. Maybe Apple has considered CDMA during its development process. Maybe it has a CDMA phone waiting in the wings, the same way it kept Mac OS X running on Intel all those years without telling anyone. Or maybe all of this is PR stuff, a PR bluff from Verizon to try to stamp out some of the interest in and the, you know, the hoopla surrounding the iPhone in the wake of Macworld. Who knows? The point is that for now, the iPhone is a Singular-only product. One day, that contract is going to run out, and Apple can either go to other carriers or renegotiate its deal with Singular. I will go out on a bit of a limb here. My money is on keeping a Singular-only relationship, and here's why. If the iPhone is wildly successful like the iPod was, Steve Jobs is going to play hardball with the renewal terms, just like he did with the exclusive Pixar-Disney deal when that started to lapse. And Apple could use the lapsing of that contract as an opportunity to force Singular to do any number of things in order to renew the contract, to develop new features on their network or cooperate in reducing contract fees, data service fees, or somehow partner on downloading music from iTunes. But Apple does clearly really like to work with people, with other firms in a collaborative way, work on technologies together and make stuff happen rather than make their stuff available for everyone to use. So it will be interesting to see what happens when that starts to lapse, and it wouldn't surprise me if we see a pretty public PR battle when that starts to roll around when the time does come.
Now, although most of the details of the Apple Singular deal are secret, there are bits of information that help build a bigger picture. And this week, we took a closer look, and here's a tidbit. Apple is not sharing with Singular any iTunes Store revenue due to new iPhone users. And here are some other details. As we know, Singular currently has an exclusive multi-year deal to distribute the iPhone. What we don't know, however, is whether or not that deal includes future iPhone models or if it is limited to the model Steve Jobs demonstrated at Macworld Expo 2007 in January. The iPhone isn't likely to see widespread enterprise-level adoption where companies provide employees with email devices, and instead companies will likely stick with the significantly less expensive entry-level BlackBerry products. However, many white-collar employees are a perfect candidate for the iPhone, since many of them carry both a personal cell phone and an iPod.
Of course, if the iPhone becomes the new hot thing like the iPod did, employers may use it as a perk.
Now, users that want to switch will have to look at some hefty costs unless Singular chooses to offer reduced service contract fees. If they're breaking a contract with another carrier, new customers could be paying as much as $836 to start using an iPhone. Because of the cost, Singular may offer contract specials at far more attractive price points. And also, many people have asked why Apple didn't include the faster 3G wireless standard in favor of Edge for data transfer. And that decision may have been driven by price. The cost savings to Apple come in at about $100. And for those keeping score, Apple's iPhone margins are estimated to be something over 30%, which is roughly in line with the Palm Treo.
So all of that, some information about the iPhone, that's stuff particular to what went on this week. But we figured, hey, let's throw it out there as the news from the week. Consider that the context machine fodder, and let's do a really quick context machine here, Jeff. I've only got one question, which is, who's the winner in this deal that Apple has struck with Singular?
I think the winner today is Apple, and that's because they were able to show the rest of the market that they could negotiate the deal they wanted for their cell phone product. Now, down the road, Singular can be a winner too, and it's up to them how they make that happen. Singular needs to make sure that they are providing the quality product that Apple users expect, meaning we're not going to have dropped calls, we're not going to have all these other issues that plagued the AT&T cell phone service, which ironically is what Singular service is going to be called again. So, yeah, if Singular can manage to give a quality product and come up with some clever ways to give incentives for people to switch over and use the iPhone, yeah, they can be a winner too.
And it will be very interesting. At the moment, it seems pretty clear that consumers do have to make at least some compromises. It seems pretty obvious when you read the discussions about 3G versus Edge and then the idea of having Wi-Fi in this phone. Those are all three different technologies for connecting to the internet and doing data transfer onto a phone. Apple chose Edge, which is the slowest of the three, and Wi-Fi, which is the fastest, but you have to be, for Wi-Fi, you have to be near a hotspot. 3G you can do on the cell network, but you can't do it if the cell network supports it. Again, you have to be in a city usually. That's where the 3G technology has been implemented first. But a lot of people have been upset about that. It seems like that's a compromise that people will have to make. And it seems inconceivable, at least to me, that Apple would not eventually include 3G in their phones if the price drops and it becomes more widely available.
I think they would. Now, one interesting thing that I haven't seen a lot of people commenting on is the fact that Apple did include Wi-Fi. And having the wireless networking in a cell phone that's sold in the United States is not a normal thing. Most cell phones in the United States do not have Wi-Fi, which then allows the cell carriers to push us into buying their data transfer services for our cell phones, which translates into more money for the carriers. When you go with Wi-Fi, the carriers don't get that money. The exception would be if you have T-Mobile's hotspot service. T-Mobile gets money for that. But outside of those types of service add-on packages, the carriers don't get any extra money. So it's a pretty remarkable thing for Apple to bring out a cell phone and have Wi-Fi built into it for the United States.
Yeah, now there is, this is, in a way, the big sleeper feature of the iPhone, right? That it has Wi-Fi. Right now, users are essentially constricted in how they use it, because in order to use Wi-Fi to do anything, Apple needs to enable it on the iPhone. But it does seem entirely possible that Apple could decide to, for example, put an iChat AV client on the iPhone and let you make free internet telephony, voice over IP phone calls, and not use your cell phone minutes as long as you were at a hotspot. Now, presumably they won't do that if it is not in the, if it's been banned based on their agreement with Singular or any other number of things, but it also seems entirely possible, again, when that contract starts to lapse, that Apple will go back to the negotiating table and say, hey, by the way, all those restrictions that you placed on what we could use Wi-Fi for, we're going to have you lift those so that we can put these new features into the phone, let people use Wi-Fi to do things that the cell carriers might not like.
Yeah, and Apple is the master of negotiation. And by master, I mean master at making negotiations work out the way they want. So sure, that's a totally plausible thing. And who knows, by the time the product actually ships, we might see that there's some type of iChat service built in, even if it, at least for now, hobbles voice communication.
We will see. Now, of course, they did tout SMS messaging and phone calling. So we'll see. We'll see how it shakes out. And of course, all of this depends, all of the discussion we're having now depends in part on how long that exclusive contract lasts, because they can't start renegotiating it until it's going to start to fall, until it's about to lapse.
Right. Okay, so how about if we take a look at some product roundup? And actually, let's wrap up our whole mic thing.
All right, well, for those of you who are following along at home, in the past several weeks, we haven't been doing this, but up until the end of last year, we were doing a series of mic reviews. We got all this product in from various places, and on the shows we were saying, hey, this is the mic that we're using to record this show. This is the mic that we're using to record next show, and so forth. So all those detailed reviews have happened in the past, but we figured today, why don't we go back and actually wrap it up and give you our conclusions about it. I guess I'll start off. The mic I'm using right now is my top pick. It is the Behringer UltraVoice XM8500, which sounds very dramatic. It is a $30 mic. $30 mic, which is fantastic.
It is.
You simply cannot beat that. And it sounds terrific. I mic myself. If you go to use a microphone like this, it's a dynamic mic. It's a Rockstar mic, right? It's a handheld thing. I happen to have it on an arm, and it's, you know, suspended above my monitor, but I mic myself about 6 inches away, and I think it sounds great for podcasting. I have no complaints about the sound. It works fine. It sounds better than a lot of the other stuff I've tried, and it's easy to use. As long as you have an audio interface, you can plug this thing in. It's got a little XLR connection. Plug it in, and it works. So I'm totally behind this mic. I think Behringer deserves great credit for putting such a fine mic and selling it at such a reasonable price. I mean, you simply cannot beat $30 for this microphone. By the way, we should have explained this before. For those of you who did not hear our previous reviews of stuff, I reviewed all the standard mics, the ones with XLR connections, and Jeff reviewed the USB mics. So as we're talking about this, all of Jeff's mics are USB, and all of mine, you need an audio interface.
Right, and the nice thing about the USB mics, for people that don't want to have to purchase a breakout box to be able to attach the microphone to their computer, USB is a nice way to go. The power supply, everything that you need is built into the mic. And for me, that's a beautiful thing, because it makes podcasting so much easier. There is less equipment to have to get in the beginning. Just microphone, plug it into the stand, plug it into my computer, and away we go. And with that said, my favorite of all the microphones that we tested, the USB microphones, was the Snowball from Blue. And it's a condenser microphone, meaning that it works well in an environment where you may not be directly in front of the microphone. You might need to pick up the sound that's all around the microphone. It works well in all those types of conditions. And I thought it was a really versatile microphone to use, and I thought it gave great audio reproduction. And I thought it's nice that it included a stand, because a lot of microphones don't. The thing is that stand to me just didn't feel quite as stable as I thought it should, and I was always worried it was going to be knocking that microphone over. But even still, I never actually did knock it over, so I guess that's a good thing.
Yeah, and it is. The Snowball is a cool microphone. I have recorded, there was a time I appeared on the Mac Geek Gab with Dave Hamilton and John Braun, and they were recording. We were on the road at the Podcast Expo, and they were using that, and it's a solid mic. Dave uses that when he travels. He uses it as his, you know, one-off mic when he's having conversations on iChat and elsewhere. And I think, what does it cost? It costs about $120, is that right?
Yeah, street price is $120, and you can find it for about $100 if you look around.
Cool. How about your second choice? This is the one that you're talking into right now.
My second choice is the Rode Podcaster, and it came in second not because it gives poor audio quality reproduction or anything like that. It's second because it doesn't have as much versatility for the everyday podcaster. This is a dynamic mic, meaning that you really need to be right in front of it when you're using it. And if you veer away from the microphone at all, it's going to quit picking up your voice very quickly. So for people that aren't comfortable having their face right in front of a microphone all the time, this might not be the best choice for them. However, it does a really good job of picking up that single point of sound, in this case your voice, and it reproduces it very well, and I think it works great. So even though the Snowball was my first choice overall, the Podcaster is the mic that I ended up using all the time.
Yeah, and it is. We had some issues in our review. We had to go back and double check to make sure that we were really experiencing what we thought we were. The Podcaster is a little bit quieter than some of the other USB mics you've tested, Jeff.
That's true.
That's kind of an inconvenience for me at my end, but it's fine. The audio quality that comes through is fantastic, and so at my end, I just boost the level a little bit in software. I use Audio Hijack Pro as I route all of this stuff to record it. I record it in Logic. But as it's passing through Audio Hijack Pro, I just boost the level a little bit, and it comes through great. So it is a little bit quieter than some other stuff. And you could use it, you know, if you're talking about versatility and recording different kinds of sounds like instruments, you could use it as an instrument mic, I imagine.
Oh, sure.
But the Snowball is really, I mean, it's got the little pattern switch. You can change it from cardioid to omnidirectional, and that's a very flexible mic. So, but it is cool, and I love the way you sound when you come through on the Podcaster.
Well, excellent. So there you go, my Podcaster. Now, actually, there's a couple other things that I like about it. Excuse me. This is a mic that I think is great for studio environment, and I believe that's actually how a lot of people are using it. And I also like that it has an audio monitor jack built right into the microphone. So if you want to hear exactly what's being picked up by the microphone, you can plug a headset into this, and it has a little volume control, and you can just listen just straight through whatever's being picked up. And that's kind of a cool feature too.
Yeah, and particularly, I mean, when it's a USB microphone, it's not necessarily easy to monitor it as you're listening to it. And depending on the machine you're using, it may actually, there may be latency, so that if you try and listen, like on the headphone jack on your Mac to the microphone, there may be issues with hearing an echo of yourself rather than hearing the sound as it comes through. And when you monitor directly into the mic, you won't have those latency issues. So that's pretty cool that they build that in.
Yes. And this microphone's street price is about $190.
Yeah. So a little bit more expensive. One other thing about dynamic mics, I use, like I said, I use this Behringer dynamic mic, the Ultra Voice 8500, XM8500. One of the things I like about dynamic mics is that I like the fact that as you move around, it changes the way it sounds. So if I want to disappear, or if I want, you know, if I want to shout stuff out, I can back up off of my mic and it sounds completely different. I can shout all I want to. And then if I get to the end of a sentence and I want to talk a little bit quieter, I can get right up on top of the mic. And you can, so you can use, as you get used to using a microphone, you can use the fact that the sound changes as you move on it. But the condenser mics are more forgiving, like that Blue Snowball. Another condenser, if you're in the market for a great condenser, this was my favorite mic that we tested in the entire series. It's the Shure KSM-27. Now, this is a professional-level mic. I think the street price is around $400. I should double-check that. But it was really fun to talk into it and to run other audio tests with it. It's a fantastic-sounding microphone. It is seriously overkill for someone just doing podcasting. So if you're looking for a podcasting mic, go with one of these other ones we're talking about. But if you want to put together a home studio, and incidentally you want a podcast, or if you're looking for an all-around solid microphone, I thought the KSM-27 sounded fantastic. It was just this beautiful, rich sound. It had growl when I did, you know, singing tests in it, and you can mic instruments with it. It's a terrific piece of hardware. So if you're looking for a present to buy, you know, your favorite studio owner, go check that out. It's a cool microphone.
Cool. Okay. And another microphone that I really loved, even though it couldn't be first or second, was the Samson CO3U, which is actually, I think, the first microphone I started playing with. And I loved that one. It's a condenser microphone also. And what I loved about it was that it did give good audio quality. It had the versatility of being a condenser microphone. And it also came with its own little carrying pouch. So they knew that they were designing a microphone that people were going to take on location with them. It's not something you want to sit there and hold in your hand while you talk, because it's heavier than a Rockstar microphone. But still, it's designed to be portable. And that was a big plus to me.
There are two other microphones that people should check out. If you're looking for USB mics, there are two condenser mics that are under $100. Samson makes one, and I think it's called the CO1U, which is like the CO3U that Jeff tested, only it doesn't have pattern switching, so you can't switch it from omnidirectional to cardioid to bipolar. And then the other one is made by Behringer, I believe, and it's called the C1. And I'm pretty sure, actually, that John Braun uses a C1 when he records the Mac Geek Gab. He might not anymore, but I know he did for many, many months.
Okay, and one last microphone, as long as we're throwing them around. I have recently started playing with M-Audio Podcast Factory, which is actually a really cool product. And the reason it couldn't be my first or second choice is because I really haven't had a chance to play with it enough yet. But it's cool. It comes with a breakout box with an XLR input. So you can use a professional mic as long as it doesn't need phantom power. And it also has a quarter-inch input. And it has a monitor output, which will avoid latency issues as well. And it's a really neat little package, just all in one. You can go out and spend, I don't remember what it costs, $100?
I think it's about $100, $120. I think it's around $100.
Okay, so for around $100, you can have everything you need to start your own podcast. It even includes software if you don't feel like using GarageBand or Logic or Audio Hijack or whatever. It comes with a bunch of software. So
yeah, and that is pretty
cool.
A lot
more than $100 worth out of the package.
I will say the audio quality, it includes, I guess, a little dynamic mic. And the audio quality out of that mic, or at least the audio quality I got on the last show, maybe two that we did, where you were using the Podcast Factory, was fine. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. It does not sound It is not in the same category as the Snowball or the Podcaster, the Rode Podcaster.
I don't think they intended it to be in the same category.
Yeah.
You know, this is for everyone that wants to get started. And I think it's a great deal for anyone that wants to get started.
Yeah, and you get that breakout box, so you can switch mics if you want to, and it gives you a little bit of flexibility. Really nice package. By the way, Jeff said something about Phantom Power. You need an audio interface with what they call Phantom Power if you want to use a conventional, meaning not USB-powered, condenser microphone. So that Shure KSM-27, that's the only one we mentioned where you need Phantom Power. All the other ones you don't have to worry about. So those are the microphones we looked at. There were some really cool products in there. I thought we had some neat stuff.
I agree.
All right. There's one other thing got to take care of here. So it is my opportunity right now to eat crow.
With the salsa of your choice.
With the salsa. And we'll talk about that salsa in a second. Last week, we reviewed portable audio recorders and focused primarily on the Eterol RO9, which is a terrific product, and I was really excited about it. We also reviewed the Zoom H4, which is a product made or distributed in the U.S. by Samson, the same company that makes these microphones that we were talking about. Now, in that review, I said that the mics on the H4 were simply not as good as the ones on the Eterol. And as often happens in this line of work, and Jeff, you know this very well, you're the reviews editor at TMO, every now and then you write something, and we always, you know, make an effort to make sure that the people at these companies see what we're writing about them and have a chance to comment on our comments and our reviews. And so I was talking with the folks at Samson, and they said, you know, we haven't heard from other reviewers that the mics on our product are not as good. And we talked a little bit about the comments that I made last week. And I said, you know what? That sounds good. I'm going to go back and make sure we heard. And this happens from time to time. We've had to do it like we were talking about before with the Rode Podcaster. Make sure that the stuff we say in these reviews is really true. So I went back and I did a mic test. And you can hear it at the end of this show where I recorded a bunch of stuff simultaneously on both things, and I play it back with one recorder playing in the left ear and one recorder playing in the right ear, and you can pan from side to side and hear the difference between the two.
Well, that's downright clever.
Yeah, so I figured, let's do that. Let's really make the comparison and make it honest and make it, you know, really stringent, because I had not done that as rigorously as that the last time around. I just kind of listened to the mics and said, oh, okay, I think I see what's going on here. Well, time for me to eat crow. The microphones in the H4 are solid microphones. I said that they were not, you know, nearly as good as the ones in the Eterol, or if that's not how I said it, that's how I made it sound. That's simply not true. I mean, they're perfectly solid mics. If you listen to the test at the end of this, and it's downcoded, so take all of that with a grain of salt. But when I listen to it, the Eterol microphones sound much richer to me. They have a depth to them that the Samson ones don't. But if what you're doing is recording, you know, if you're recording interviews, if you're recording yourself playing a song, for most people buying in this category, in these types of products, it's not going to be a deal breaker. The Samson mics sound fine. They sound great, particularly on a product that costs $250. So I don't think it's going to be the difference of choosing one product over another for most people. I prefer the mics on the Eterol, but you know, it's not a huge difference. And take a listen to that test at the end of the show. A couple of other comments. I did not point out last week, and this is very important. We were talking about the H4 and all these gadgets that it has, and it has combo jacks and the Eterol doesn't, and it has Phantom Power and the Eterol doesn't. I forgot to point out in that list of things that the H4 does that the Eterol doesn't, It's also a four-track recorder, so you can go and record, you know, a track of yourself playing guitar, and then you can go back and play a track of yourself or record a track of yourself singing, and then you can go back and record a track of yourself playing the bass. So you can actually, it is a little mobile recording studio. And I made some comment about how only the Marantz gives you some options to edit your audio. That's, again, it's not true. You can, on the H4, you can punch in the middle of a song and do a whole four-track recording deal. The navigation, I did say last week, is not entirely fluid, so it's not the most convenient way to record stuff, but it's a mobile four-track recorder, and you can't knock that. So it is the most studio-like product of those three things that we reviewed last week. So I wanted to, this is my chance to eat crow, right? So here is the bottom line, and I want to reset expectations because I fear I may have left everyone with the wrong impression at the end of the last show. Personally, I am most excited about the R09 because of the stuff that I do. It has that low body noise. I like the quality of the mics. I think the navigation is really fluid and easy. But, of course, this is not about me. This is about the product that's best for you if you're looking for one of these things. And so the bottom line is this. If you want a Swiss Army knife, the H4 is your product. It does everything. It has combo jacks, phantom power, four-track recorder, stereo recorder. The mics are perfectly solid. It's got this compressor and limiter in it. It does everything. And it does it perfectly well. For me, the R09 is a machete. It does one thing very, very well. It records stuff in stereo with these built-in mics, and it has, you know, a little external mic jack. But fundamentally, it does the one thing I want it to do, and it does it really solidly. So that's the comparison that I should have left everyone with at the end of last week. The R09 is the machete, and the H4 is the Swiss Army knife. So mea culpa.
Yeah, but you know, that wasn't bad, Crow.
It could be much worse.
It could be much worse. You know, yeah, it's not like you said, wow, you know, the H4 is the best cheese grater I've ever used. Yeah. And then they contact you and say, yeah, it's not a cheese grater.
You may not have realized this, but it doesn't do so good when you rub cheese on it.
Which would have probably been one of your key points.
Now, we... Yeah, that's right. I mean, we've been doing this, both of us, for long enough. I'm sure that we've had some harrowing moments when we get in touch with people we reviewed. So I guess it's not all bad. But again, if you're in the market for these things, hopefully that clears up some of the trade-offs.
Okay, great. And as far as I know, that's all the news. Thanks for listening to Apple Weekly Report.
All right. And our content, of course, is written by the fine people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom for TMO, including the little bass interlude that shows up in the mic test at the end. That is all I have got this week.
And please stay subscribed.
Until next week, everyone, we'll see you online. This is a microphone test for two portable audio recorders, the Eterol R09 and the Zoom H4. Now we're going to do four audio tests. The first one is me talking, and then there are some other things coming up. All of these were recorded in uncompressed wave format and then turned into mono files, and the Eterol is playing in your left channel, and the Zoom is playing in your right channel. So if you pan between the two, you can hear one and compare it to the other. Don't play them at the same time, since they're recording simultaneously, they might get weird phasing things. So, enjoy!
busted in Laredo, but for reasons that I'd rather not disclose. If you're staying in a motel there and leave, just don't leave nothing in your clothes. And at the airport in Milwaukee, they refused to let us board the plane at all. They said we looked suspicious, but I believe they like to pick on me and Paul.